logo of a thick-maned lion framed by a ring of film, Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. Now a telephone receiver lies unhooked on a nightstand near an ashtray filled with cigarette butts. Titles appear. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer presents John O'Hara's Butterfield 8. Our view slowly pulls back from the nightstand to reveal a dark-haired woman asleep in bed. Lying on her side, the delicately featured woman nuzzles her face into the pillow. Titles continue, starring Elizabeth Taylor as Gloria Wandress, Lawrence Harvey as Weston Liggett, Eddie Fisher as Steve Carpenter, and Dina Merrill as Emily Liggett. This film has been described by the Media Access Group at WGBH, with funding by the U.S. Department of Education, described by Dan Davis and Joshua Kastorf, read by Chloe Lehman. For more about description, visit our website at access.wgbh.org. Music by Bronislaw Kaper. Directors of Photography, Joseph Ruttenberg, ASC, and Charles Harder, ASC. Filmed in CinemaScope and Metricolor. Copyright 1960 Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. Morning light casts a shadow on the woman's fair, smooth face as she sleeps. Titles continue. Art directors, George W. Davis and Yuri McCleary. Film editor, Ralph E. Winters. Costumes designed by Helen Rose. Associate producer, Catherine Hereford. Screenplay by Charles Schnee and John Michael Hayes. A Pando S. Berman production, directed by Daniel Mann. The woman throws a hand over her eyes, blocking the sunlight. The woman stretches under the covers, her eyes still closed. The woman's eyes flutter open for a moment as she glances at the nightstand.
Liggett.
Now, a well-dressed man steps into an elevator.
Good morning, Mr. Liggett.
Morning.
Liggett puts on gloves as the elevator man closes the door. In the bedroom, the woman sits up wearily, her eyes closed and the sheet held to her chest below her bare shoulders.
Oh.
She rolls her head drowsily and runs a hand through her tousled, chin-length, raven black hair. Her face is round with high cheekbones and a beauty mark on her right cheek. Blinking her heavily lined eyes and furrowing her brow, she looks around the room. The woman reaches over to the nightstand and picks up a cigarette pack. Finding it empty, she crumples it and hurls it away. She pokes through the cigarette butts in the ashtray, then looks away, sighing. Wrapping the white bedsheet around herself like a formal gown, she gets up out of bed and pads across the posh bedroom. At a credenza holding a potted bonsai tree, she checks another cigarette pack, then crumples it and tosses it over her shoulder. She turns and steps across the elegantly furnished room, then rummages through items on a coffee table. She pauses to glance around, then walks back to the nightstand. She takes a cigarette butt out of the ashtray, drops it, then picks up a pack of thin cigars. She takes one out, puts it in her mouth, and lights it with a porcelain lighter. She takes a long drag off the cigar. Exhaling smoke, she grimaces. Wheezing, the woman stubs out the cigar and hurries back to the coffee table. She picks up a crystal decanter and pours herself a drink. She takes a big swallow, then shudders. Taking another sip, she glances around the room, then fixes her gaze at the floor. She steps around the table toward a marble fireplace where she nudges a crumpled dress with her bare foot. The salmon and gold brocade dress lies near a pair of matching pumps. The woman picks up the dress and holds it up to her body. It's torn down the back. She purses her lips as she checks the tear. Methodically, she crumples the dress into a ball and hurls it down to the floor. She picks up a silk slip from a nearby chair. Sliding it on, she drops her bedsheet to the floor.
Liggett!
Wearing the pumps and with the slip clinging to her buxom body, she strides across the room, picking up her drink as she passes the coffee table. Standing in the the bathroom doorway, she takes a sip from her glass and looks around, eyeing the ornate gold fixtures and pink marble walls. She peeks into a shower stall. The woman saunters up to the sink. Putting down her drink, she checks her eyelashes in a large three-panel mirror. She picks up a washcloth, wets it under the faucet, and dabs it under her eyes. The woman picks up a toothbrush and swirls it around in her drink. She watches herself in the mirror as she brushes her teeth. She spits into the sink, dips the brush into her glass, and continues brushing. She takes a swig from her glass, swishes it around in her mouth, then spits. Replacing the toothbrush, she struts back toward the bedroom, carrying her drink. The woman stops and gazes at a closed door. She opens it and steps into a dressing room. Small crystal chandeliers flank a gold leaf mirror, and rows of women's shoes fill shelves along the wall. Sitting at a vanity in front of the mirror, she sniffs a bottle of perfume, then puts it down and smells another bottle. With a shrug, she pours perfume onto her hands and rubs it over her forearms and neck. She replaces the stopper in the perfume bottle, then peeks into a jewelry box. She gets to her feet and sashays over to a closet. Sliding open the door, she examines the dresses and coats inside. A brown mink coat catches her eye. She runs her fingers gingerly over the fur, then takes it out of the closet and holds it against her body. Closing her eyes, she longingly strokes the fur and brushes her cheek against the coat shawl collar. She holds up the coat for a moment, gazing at it, then gently hangs it back up. Frowning, she yanks a white fur-trimmed cloth coat off its hanger and pulls it on over her slit. She shrugs as she looks at herself in the mirror. Picking up her drink, she goes back into the bedroom. Placing her glass on the nightstand, she hangs up the telephone and picks up a tube of lipstick. She carries the lipstick to the credenza, where she finds her small gold purse. Putting the lipstick into her purse, she finds a note inside. Her jaw drops as she reads it. Gloria, $250. Enough? We'll phone you later. L. Gloria pulls a roll of bills from the folded note. Her hands trembling and her brow furrowed, she turns and looks toward the bed. She takes a deep breath, sets her jaw, then walks to a large mirror over the fireplace. With her eyes closed, she heaves another sigh. She uncaps the tube of lipstick and brings it near her mouth. Pausing, Gloria presses her lips firmly and uses her lipstick to write on the mirror, spelling out "No Sale" in large pink letters. Slamming her lipstick down, she stuffs the wad of bills into a small porcelain clock on the mantel. She rips the note into tiny bits and hurls them down as she strides into the hall and then into the dressing room. At the closet, she takes off the cloth coat and hangs it up, then yanks out the brown mink. Its hanger falls to the floor. Gloria slides the mink coat on over her slip as she struts back into the bedroom. With a defiant glare, she pulls the coat closed and eyes herself in the mirror. She places her lipstick tube in her gold handbag, wraps the mink coat tight, and heads out, her violet eyes narrowed. At the door of the apartment, she stops, then turns and hurries over to a nearby phone, her slip showing under the fur. Her jaw clenched, she picks up the phone and dials.
Butterfield, eh?
Hi, it's Gloria. Any messages?
Mm-hmm. Charlie, yeah. George, uh-huh. Listen, Mr. Liggett will call sometime today. He might use Mr. L. Find me wherever I am. This is one call I want to take personally. And immediately. Okay. Bye-bye.
Hanging up the receiver, Gloria notices a row of four crystal decanters sitting on a shelf. She picks up the largest decanter, opens it, and sniffs. Smirking, she replaces the stopper and puts it down. She picks up her purse, then with a glance at the decanter, takes out a bill and slaps it down on the shelf. She takes the decanter and walks out. Later, she steps through glass doors onto a city sidewalk, carrying the decanter. She holds the mink coat tightly closed as she walks out to the street and waves her arm.
Taxi!
A yellow cab stops across the street. Gloria runs over to it.
38 Horatio Street, please.
Yes, ma'am.
Double your tip for a cigarette.
As the cab pulls away, a couple of pedestrians step in front of it. The taxi screeches to a halt. The man and woman hurry away and the cab drives off. Inside.
You're in good voice this morning.
The cab driver hands her a cigarette. Later, the taxi stops in a narrow street in front of a row of townhouse apartment buildings. The driver touches his cap as Gloria gets out. As the cab drives away, Gloria runs up to a small red sports car parked nearby and opens the door. Reaching into the glove box, she spots a parking ticket stuck under her windshield wiper. Gloria grabs the ticket, pulls a pair of pantyhose out of the glove box, and starts toward a building. Pausing, she glances up and down the empty street, then stuffs the ticket under another car's windshield wiper. She hurries up the steps of a red brick building and goes inside. In a dingy hallway, she walks up to an apartment door.
Yeah?
I'm from the Census Bureau.
She nudges open the door with her foot.
Good morning.
A man sits at a piano.
How many persons do you have living here?
Just one, me.
Well, that's not nearly enough.
She enters and closes the door.
You working?
I'm trying to. Tomorrow's arrangements.
She hands him the decanter.
Tribute.
To what?
Your faith, hope, and charity.
She kisses him.
Sunday morning and scotch on your breast?
Oh, it's good scotch. 20 years old.
And cigar smoke?
I always said I'd try anything once.
Mm-hmm. Ever try common sense?
Only in desperation.
The man plays the piano. Gloria folds a Murphy bed into its closet.
Notice anything unusual about me this morning?
I wish I could.
Smiling, she models the mink coat.
Look.
He ignores her as she struts back and forth in front of the closet.
Well, look!
Okay, you're panning to tell me where you got it.
I stole it.
Sure you did. Figures.
Oh, not for real. Just long enough to get even with somebody.
Even for what?
Money made me so damn mad. He left me money. He actually left me money.
Frowning, the man turns away. He picks up the decanter and studies it.
Well, what would you have done?
I don't know. You see, my work is designed so that people will leave me money.
Oh, if this wasn't work.
She takes a cigarette from his case.
Besides, my dress was torn. Well, I had nothing to wear. So I borrowed something spiteful and elegant.
He fetches an ashtray and holds it out to her.
Liggett. Weston Amsbury Liggett. Do you know him?
Heard of him. He's very social.
And very Yale.
What's with you in Yale? Always Yale.
It's the last college left.
Why?
Well, I started with Amherst and I worked my way through the alphabet to Yale. I'm stuck there. Of course, I could work backwards again.
She lights her cigarette.
Did he tell you about his wife?
She'll join.
I hear he's a lush.
Oh, a rumor of little minds. Well, we did have a drink together last night.
One?
A dozen, maybe.
And this morning you stagger out of his apartment. Charming.
Funny thing, I don't even remember going there. Better than sleeping pills.
Oh. Gloria stretches and yawns.
Can I help you with anything?
She takes off the mink coat. Wearing only the slip, she gets up from the couch and struts up behind him. She stares down at him as he plays.
Can I help you with anything?
She rests her hand on his shoulder.
Housework?
He avoids her gaze as she strokes his ear.
You can put that coat back on.
Why?
Half-dressed women make it difficult for me to concentrate.
Well, then, don't.
She sits on his lap, nuzzles the back of his head, and runs her fingers over his neck.
They'll think of me as a woman. After all, we're just like brother and sister. Remember?
Yeah.
He pulls away and faces her, gaping. Gloria stares back, then stands.
Oh, you really are mad at me this morning, aren't
you? Put the coat on.
Their eyes lock for a moment and he looks away. Gloria goes to the couch and picks up the fur coat.
Why this morning?
Because I'm sick of opening that door every other day and finding you boozed up, burned out, and ugly.
Sick for me or sick for you?
For you, for everything you're wasting. Why do you come here like this?
Where have I always come, Steve? At least I can be honest with you.
Start being honest with yourself. You're making a mess out of your life and you're forcing me to watch it.
Do you want me to go?
Yes.
For good?
Yes.
Steve gets to his feet and paces, opening and closing his fists. Gloria puts on the fur coat and opens the door.
No.
She stops and turns to face him. Slowly, she closes the door, her violet eyes glistening and her soft pink lips trembling.
It's terrible, isn't it, Steve? I say yes too much when I shouldn't, and you say no too much when you shouldn't. But you're not really as mad as you pretend to be, are you?
I try to be.
She gives him a warm smile and his scowl melts to a grin.
Hungry?
Ravenous.
She follows him into his cramped kitchenette. While Steve makes coffee and sets the table, Gloria changes into one of his shirts.
Now the problem is, how do I get home?
Car's outside, you drive. Oh, and by the way, thanks for the use of it.
Anytime. What I mean is, what's my mother gonna think if I show up dressed like this?
Your mother knows everything about you.
Yeah, that may be so, but we never admit it. I'm still her innocent little girl. And she's my dear, sweet, cookie-baking mother.
So, go home, give her an innocent smile, and have a cookie.
Oh, Steve.
And tell her the truth.
If I tell her the truth, I'll have to move out.
That's what normally happens when people grow up.
Gloria cracks eggs into a bowl.
If I left, she'd be lonesome. I'm all she has, so we have to lie to each other.
What does your analyst say about all this?
Oh, I only tell Dr. Treadman what I think he ought to hear.
She pours liquor into the eggs.
If I were intelligent, I wouldn't need a psychiatrist. Listen, where am I going to find a dress to wear on Sunday?
How would I know?
Your girlfriend Norma's almost my size.
You expect me to ask Norma to bring her clothes over here to put on you?
Well, it would certainly get me out of a jam.
Put me in one.
Steve, listen to old Gloria. The greater the sacrifice you ask a woman to make for you, the more she knows you love her. Honestly.
She puts the bowl of eggs on top of a stack of books and LPs, then picks up the telephone. Steve, a wiry man with dark wavy hair, looks on. Gloria holds out the telephone and motions for him to take it.
Hello?
She hands it to him.
Hello?
Hello, Norma?
Now a commuter train thunders through suburbs. In a crowded passenger compartment, Liggett sits staring pensively ahead, his brow furrowed. As the man seated next to him puts papers into a briefcase, Liggett drags on a thin cigar.
Problems, Liggett?
Mm-hmm.
I haven't said a word since we left the city.
Bing. You know, three of the most overrated things in this world. Home loving, home cooking, and security.
That should be engraved over the doorway of the store club.
No, it should be engraved over the doorway of my apartment.
Oh, come on, Lig. You've got everything. Lots of people would envy you.
But am I happy?
Obviously not.
Ever wonder why?
I have. You take it from an old fraternity brother. You're a heel. A low-down, rotten heel. Anything that doesn't go your way, anything you can't have, you destroy.
I've known you all these years, and I never realized you despised me that much.
If I really despised you, Lig, I could never tell you what I think of you.
Tell me.
You married a lovely, faithful woman, and you mistreat her because you blame her for the life you lead. Drinking, leching, and lying. You won't face the truth.
And what is this so-called truth?
You find it out yourself.
Tell me.
Wouldn't be any good. Go out and earn it the way everybody else does. The offer's still open, Lig. You can come back as a law partner with me. Anytime.
Arching an eyebrow, Liggett faces Bing.
I wouldn't join the Foreign Legion with you.
Later, at a firing range, a woman watches Liggett aim a skeet rifle.
Pull!
Emily?
Yes, darling?
How's your mother?
She's doing very well, thank you. Getting much stronger.
When are you coming back to town?
As soon as I can. Why, are you getting lonesome?
Sometimes. The question was more one of curiosity than passion.
Frowning, Emily slides a shell into the chamber of her shotgun. She turns her back to Liggett and aims the rifle.
Pull?
Her second shot hits the skeet in midair.
I have to get back to town after lunch.
Oh, but I invited the Farleys for dinner tonight.
My apologies to the Farleys. Cliff Holbrook's in town. And the court jester of the chemical industry has to keep him laughing, doesn't he?
They walk to another shooting station. Liggett loads two shells into his shotgun and readies himself, his rifle aimed at the sky.
Pull!
He hits both flying targets.
After all, as vice president in charge of nonsense, I have to keep a $6 million customer happy, don't I?
Blonde-haired Emily loads her rifle and aims.
Why don't you send someone less important in the company?
There isn't anybody less important than me.
Pull?
Liggett turns and walks away. Emily follows with her rifle propped on her shoulder.
Darling?
Mm-hmm?
Will you be charming at the country club today? I know you're always charming, but will you be especially so?
Why?
Well, I was indirectly approached to see if you consider being elected to the Board of Governors.
Why me? Nobody on that board is under 60. Isn't that where aging, useless executives go to die?
Maybe they want to get some young blood on it.
Or maybe when they look at me, all they see is just another aging, useless executive.
Why do you always say such cruel things about yourself?
To beat everybody, including you, to the punch.
He aims.
Pull!
Now, at Steve's apartment, a woman watches Gloria zip up a skirt.
Somebody at the cleaner seems to have left a pin in it. I know how embarrassed you must be, Norman. I'll speak to them. Really, this is terribly sweet of you. Just remember, that suit has led a sheltered life. It shocks easily. Well, then it's time it had a little adventure. By the way, just for the record, what did happen to your dress? Well, it's a funny thing. One minute it was there, the next minute it wasn't. Much like your virtue, I presume. Am I wrong? Somehow, I get the feeling that you don't like me. Oh, and I tried so hard to conceal it. Why, Norma? You're Steve's girl.
Steve looks out from the kitchenette.
I'm just an old friend. Well, listen, old friend, it's about time.
Are you decent?
I am. You can speak for yourself.
Gloria gives her a look.
Come on in.
Steve carries in three drinks on a tray, and everyone takes one. Gloria raises her glass.
I hate to drink and run. To the three of us.
One for all and all for one.
The question is, which one?
Draining her glass, Gloria ignores Norma's toast.
Steve, where are the keys to my car?
Right there in the mantel.
Oh, darling, don't forget to feed Junior regularly.
She points to Norma. Picking up the key from the mantel, Gloria opens the door.
Bye now.
She blows them a kiss, then leaves. Norma sighs, and Steve finishes his drink. He hangs up the fur coat.
Steve?
Yeah?
What are we going to do?
About what?
Me, you, her, three mixed-up musketeers.
I don't understand.
How are you fixed for honesty? You know how old I am?
27.
How long have we been what they call going together?
3 years.
And 4 months. That's a lot of time, Steve, to put in on a man who doesn't seem to be able to make up his mind.
He pours some of Gloria's scotch.
What are you talking about, marriage or what?
I didn't say that. But it's Gloria or me.
Are you going to tell me who I can or can't have for friends?
I'm only telling you that you can't kiss me wishing I were Gloria anymore.
That's the stupidest thing I ever heard.
Call me when you make up your mind. Shall we set a deadline, say New Year's Eve?
Now, wait a minute. Let me get this straight. You mean you're handing me an ultimatum?
Well, the first ultimatum is always the hardest. Goodbye and good luck.
Gloria, don't go like this.
My name is Norma.
Her eyes moist, she leaves. Steve flips the decanter stopper into the air and catches it with an angry snap. Now, the little red sports car parks in a city street and Gloria gets out. A thin, elderly woman watches through a window, clutching a small Pomeranian dog.
Here's Gloria now.
From where? Girl Scout camp?
Another woman sips from a coffee cup.
Do I look all right?
Do you have to?
The elderly woman places the dog on her friend's lap and walks away. The coffee drinker nudges the little dog to the floor. Gloria enters.
Hi, girls!
Oh,
the coffee drinker watches the others embrace.
Oh, you're getting circles under your eyes, dear.
Too much reading.
Dear Mrs. Thurber.
Well, how's church?
Why don't you go sometime and find out? Oh, coffee is what I need.
I bet.
Now, Frances. You know Gloria's always been a big coffee drinker ever since she was little. Oh, that's a perfectly lovely suit, dear. Have I seen it before?
No.
I picked it up at the designer's last week. Had it in the trunk of the car. Must be hard changing clothes in one of those foreign car trunks.
The model agency sent some dresses. One of them they want you to wear to three different places tonight.
The Salvation Army, the Public Library, and the PTA in Brownsville.
Gloria sneers.
Frances, don't joke about Gloria's work. It's very important to her. She's one of the few girls of her kind in the city.
Frances shakes her head.
I pass.
Did Butterfield 8 call?
Not today.
Any mail?
Well...
Oh, well, just act like I'm not here.
You mean I haven't been?
Well, there's a card from the finance company. You're 2 weeks late on your car payments.
Oh, it completely slipped my mind. Listen, I've only got about $40. Could I borrow $35 from you until I'm paid?
Of course, darling.
I don't know what I'd do without you. Thank you, Doug. I think I'll get cleaned up and do my nails.
Yeah, sharpen them.
For you, Mrs. Thurber, I would.
In case you forgot, your room's the first one on the right.
Oh, thank you.
Gloria, exactly where did you stay last night?
Oh, the penthouse at the YWCA. Oh, Annie.
Please don't tease Gloria. Anne. My daughter and my best friend should appreciate each other.
Oh, Mama, don't be upset. Every time I'm separated from Mrs. Thurber, I learn to appreciate her a little bit more.
I return the sentiments. Enjoy them in good health.
Thank you, Frances.
I spent the night with Steve's girlfriend, Norma.
Ah, isn't that nice? She knows a boy whose girlfriend is that unselfish.
That's a girlfriend that won't have a boyfriend long.
A compliment from you, Mrs. Thurber?
I must have said it wrong.
See you later.
Now, Liggett enters his apartment wearing a black overcoat. He removes his gloves and steps into the bedroom. Glancing toward the bed, he smiles and removes his coat. He turns and sees the mirror over the fireplace. He strides up to the mirror where the words "no sale" are written in glorious pink lipstick. Liggett finds the money stuffed into the clock and counts the bills. He turns and glances at the bed, his eyebrow arched. He picks the salmon-colored dress off the floor and examines the tear. Liggett walks over to the nightstand and tosses the dress onto the bed. He picks up the telephone receiver and dials. In her mother's bathroom, Gloria takes a shower, shampooing her hair. Wrapped in a towel, she picks up the bathroom phone.
Hello? He's on the line? Let me speak to him. Mr. Liggett, I didn't think you'd be foolish enough to call today after last night, but since you have...
Wow. I haven't heard words like that since I was in Marine boot camp. But you're way out of line, honey.
Don't honey me, you idiot. Keep that sweet dress.
Okay. No, honey. But I tore your dress last night and felt I owed you a new one. After all, only a fool would offer pennies for a Renoir. Suppose we meet again tonight at the old trading post.
I might be in the neighborhood. If I am, what time will you be there?
Oh, about 8:30.
Listen, I'm getting cold in my skin. Goodbye.
Later, in a bar, Liggett hands money to a cigarette girl.
Keep changing. Say you want some?
The bartender places a second drink in front of Liggett.
Thank you, Liggett.
Gloria enters wearing a low-cut black dress, long black gloves, and a pearl necklace. She walks up to Liggett and raises a glass.
May Yale go bankrupt.
That'll take a while. But here's to it.
He raises his drink, but Gloria pulls back from his toast. She takes a sip, shuddering slightly. She sits, folding her arms on the bar. He takes a seat next to her and leans in close.
We didn't talk much last night, did we?
Hardly. But be grateful for small favors.
I'm sorry about the money.
Forgotten.
Hey, you're with me, kid, remember?
By choice, only.
You're all alike, aren't you? Play tough.
I'm not like anyone, I'm me.
Oh, that's right. I shouldn't knock it, should I? You know, last night you were great company. I've spent a little time around and about.
I didn't ask for your credits last night. I don't need them now.
Oh, but you're something different.
Sure. I got the world by the tail.
That's what I wanted to talk to you about. What do you want?
Just what I'm getting.
Oh, now, come on, dollface.
You must go to some very bad plays.
Okay. Gloria. Now, look. You have a price. We all have. And I can go pretty high. So hold out for all you can get. You may hit it pretty big. On the other hand, if you try for too much, you may end up with nothing.
She puts down her drink and starts to leave.
Good night.
He grabs her wrist.
You've got a great act.
Gritting her teeth, Gloria stomps down onto his foot and grinds her stiletto heel into his shoe. Their eyes lock. Liggett clutches her wrist, his face reddening. Trembling, Gloria grinds her heel harder into his shoe. Liggett winces but keeps his grip on her arm. Gloria's eyes widen as she struggles against him. Finally, he releases her wrist and she yanks her arm away. She steps up, off his foot, and Liggett slouches.
Go ahead, rub your wrist. I know it hurts.
Not if it killed me.
I want to take you in my arms and carry you right out of here.
That was a lesson, pal, not a treatment.
I won't talk about money again, but think. An apartment as big as you want. Charge accounts.
Mr. Liggett,
Put your assets away. You don't have enough.
Try me.
You couldn't match what I've already turned down. 180-foot yacht in the French Riviera, Van Goghs in every room, genuine type Van Goghs, paid for by this man with pocket money, annuities for life, jewelry.
You turned this down?
Flatly.
Why?
I earn my living modeling clothes like this.
Oh, I wish I had a tape recorder.
Command performances leave me quite cold. I've had more fun in the back seat of a 39 Ford than I could ever have in the vault of the Chase National Bank.
Now I get it. You pick the man. He doesn't pick you.
Finally! Why I'm not teaching logic at Columbia, I'll never know.
One moment. Postgraduate course. You also drop the man when you want.
And without a parachute.
Oh, I'm with you, kid. And very, very grateful to be up there for the trip.
It's the first nice thing you've said since I met you.
He leans in to kiss her, but she turns her head.
Drink up before you're too busy to reach for it.
And then let's go on. Go. Go.
Slowly, friend. I have work to do.
Namely?
I have three elegant bistros where I'm obliged to be photographed in this dress. Besides, you'll enjoy seeing my good side first. This time, let's take my car.
You mean the one with that crazy backseat?
The same.
Liggett raises his drink, then puts it down in the bar. Wrapping his arm around her shoulders, he walks her away. Now, in another crowded barroom, men in suits boost Gloria up onto the bar. A photographer readies his camera as the bartender hands her a champagne bottle. The six men form two lines, holding out their glasses in front of her. At a nearby table, Liggett looks on, drinking by himself and puffing on a cigarette. Gloria pours the champagne and smiles, and the camera flashes. While the others raise their glasses and leave, one man helps Gloria down from the bar. Liggett watches as the man pulls her close and whispers in her ear. Smiling, Gloria squeezes his hand and he leaves. She joins Liggett, who stares down at his drink. Another man comes up to Gloria and whispers in her ear. She smiles. Scowling, Liggett stubs out his cigarette. Later, as they sit together in a round booth at an upscale restaurant, another man walks up.
Excuse me, darling, I'll be right back.
Gloria!
Oh.
You three times today, you didn't answer.
Well, I sent you a telegram. I guess you didn't get it.
I think I'm getting it now.
Yeah, yes, you are.
Look, I've got some of the fellows from New Haven over there, and you're just the thing we need.
But you see, I'm working. And besides, I'm with somebody.
See, aren't you Weston Liggett?
No, I'm Whistler's father.
There's nothing I love better than a great kidder.
Oh, it's a lost art. But he's one of the greatest.
Liggett arches an eyebrow at her. Later, Gloria rides next to him as he drives.
El Morocco's right around this corner. He drove right by it.
That's right.
Now look.
Now you look. I'm tired of looking and listening. Nobody treats me like this.
Oh, you mean big Weston Liggett, the wealthy.
I mean me, Weston Liggett, the man.
I didn't know there was such a person.
In spades, honey. I wasn't cut out to be a chauffeur. I rented escort. A straight man for your nightclub repartee.
No, you mustn't run yourself down like that. And the next time you get angry, sweetheart, just remember you sent for me. I didn't send for you.
She glares at him. Stopping the car, Liggett reaches into his pocket.
Take one of these out for me, will you?
He hands her a pack of thin cigars, and she pulls one out and places it in his mouth. Gloria strikes a match and lights Liggett's cigar. He gazes at her as she holds the match between them, the fire burning low. Gloria opens her mouth to blow out the match. Liggett blows at the same time, and together they extinguish the flame.
Like hell you didn't send for me.
Taking a drag on the cigar, Liggett drives away.
Now what? Are you going to drag me off to your cave?
My apartment's only 3 minutes away from here.
Oh, no. Not your apartment. Absolutely not.
It's all right for you last night.
Yes, but you see, last night my sense of direction was slightly impaired by gin.
Okay, I got caves all over the place.
As Liggett turns sharply, Gloria lets her head fall on his shoulder.
You straighten up now. We've made the curve.
But I don't want to.
Hello.
She closes her eyes, her diamond earrings glittering against her fair skin. Now, the red sports car pulls into a parking lot under a flashing neon motel sign. A billboard near the sign reads, Happy's Motel. Liggett parks near the motel office. Red and green flashing lights pulse down from the neon sign as Liggett enters the office.
Happy! Happy!
A no vacancy sign rests on the desk. A woman enters.
Good evening.
Good evening, Happy.
If it isn't Mr. Liggett.
I see you're all filled up.
Oh, well, now I wouldn't be happy if I wasn't.
She playfully smacks him in the stomach, then waves out to the parking lot.
We always have room for two more weary travelers.
Now, if you'll excuse me, I have to get some rest.
Oh, sure, I know. Hey, I've got a new joke for you. Now, it's crazy, and there's some words
now,
that
please,
you may
Happy.
Not have heard before, but it seems there were these two old maids.
Now, some other time, Happy. Later.
Oh, sure.
Later.
Man's got to get his rest. He's got to get it regular.
He helps Gloria out of the car.
Honey, there was a time I could have worn that coat.
Happy was in vaudeville once. I'll tell you about it
in
later.
In vaudeville? I was vaudeville. You should see my scrapbooks.
Liggett and Gloria walk to their motel room holding hands. Happy watches them, pulling her jacket closed tight around her neck. Smiling, she turns and walks away. Liggett puts the key in the lock and opens the door. He steps aside to let Gloria go in, then follows her, leaving the door open. The red and green neon light flashes like a strobe, illuminating them as they kiss. His arms wrapped around her, Liggett pushes the door closed with his foot. Later, at a diner, the couple sits at a small table.
You know, you're liable to end up psychologically famous. Case history and medical books.
You writing it?
No. But I have to tell my psychiatrist everything that happens to me. Even down to the smallest, darkest details.
That's a set of notes I'd like to read. But why do you need a psychiatrist? If I've ever met anyone direct and uninhibited, it's you.
Well, you know that Latin motto, sic transit gloria? I'm the Gloria, and in my case, the sick is for real sick. I'm not too sure about the transit. I think it has something to do with my car.
Liggett smiles. As Gloria eats her food, he stares intently at her.
Gloria, you're wonderful.
Wild is the word.
The first genuine wildness I've ever come across in a woman.
Have you ever stopped to think that perhaps you bring out the wildness in me?
With you, who has time to think?
Take five. Waitress, could I have some more french fries?
Yeah. Gloria, where do we go from here?
That's a good question. Why don't we go on a long trip to faraway places? Exploring.
Exploring what?
What else? Each other.
Now, at his apartment, Steve hands sheet music to a client.
Here's the overture. Theme. Where's the theme? I'll get it.
The client opens the door. It's Norma.
Oh, you're working. I'll drop by later.
Oh, come on in. We're finished. Sit down. I'll have the last 16 bars and the tag for you tomorrow. About noon.
See you, Steve.
Steve guides his client out the door, then turns and smiles.
Now...
I found your message and came over.
I wanted to thank you for the birthday gift.
It was ordered a long time ago. The store sent it out automatically. And a few days early at that.
She helps him into a black cardigan sweater.
I've missed seeing you, Norma.
place is a wreck.
Guess so. I've been busy. Here, let me take your coat.
He helps her out of her plaid overcoat.
Thank you.
She picks up some dishes as Steve hangs her coat in the back of his closet door. He takes the dishes from her and carries them into the kitchen. Norma sees the mink coat with the monogram EL hanging behind hers.
It's the story of my life.
What is?
My simple cloth coat hanging in your closet next to Gloria's mink. Well, at least mine's paid for.
This is not her coat. She borrowed it.
Uh-huh.
I don't know where she is. I've been calling Butterfield 8 for the past 4 days. They don't know where she is.
I do.
Where?
She's way out in another world.
He hangs her coat on the door.
Now, if you give me my coat back, I'll be running along.
You just got here.
I know, but it was a mistake.
Norma.
I thought when I found your message to come over here that you'd made up your mind about things, but I see you're still muddling along. No thanks.
Norma, sit down.
I don't want to sit down.
Norma, sit down and listen.
She sits on the couch.
Every time we see each other, we always end up in a fight about Gloria. Now, without either one of us raising our voices, just let me try and explain Gloria to you once and for all.
That's going to be quite a job.
Gloria and I grew up in the same neighborhood. I've known her all my life. We went to the same school together. Her father died when she was very little. Her mother went to work. So, I sort of became her family. Somebody has to look after her. I'm going to do it for as long as it takes. Now, will you try to understand?
I understand.
I knew you would.
I understand that it's worse than I thought. Much worse. You are actually in love with her and you don't even know it.
He sits at the piano.
Steve, is she or is she not a tramp?
I never liked that word.
Is she not the biggest tramp in this whole city?
I especially don't like to hear you use it.
Suppose you do make up your mind to marry me someday. We marry and have children. You want her hanging around, babysitting maybe? Nipping brandy out of her handbag at 8 a.m. and telling them the story of Little Red Riding Hood and the three lecherous bears in a hotel room? Do we keep a spare room where she can sleep off her hangovers?
All I know is I worry about her.
But does she worry about you? Does she?
I don't know and I don't care. This is something I'm going to do whether you like it or not, Norma.
He stomps into the kitchenette. She takes her plaid jacket off the closet door and follows him. Steve stands frowning in front of the sink, a glass in his hand. He shuts off the faucet as she approaches.
Steve, I withdraw my ultimatum. This fight is far too important for me to run away.
Norma moves closer and he takes her hand.
If I'm going to lose, it's only going to be because I'm thoroughly beaten.
She gives him a soft, slow kiss on the cheek. Steve stares at her.
If you don't kiss me, I'm going to kiss you.
She kisses him on the lips. He takes her in his arms and they kiss. Now, on a snowy suburban street, Gloria's red sports car parks in front of a large white two-story house. Liggett gets out on the driver's side, walks around the front of the car, and opens the passenger side door for Gloria. He nods toward the house.
That's where I was born.
She climbs out wearing a cloth swing coat with a fur-trimmed hood.
Right behind that window up there.
It's not what I pictured at all.
It isn't what my mother pictured either. We couldn't even afford a doctor. My father had to deliver me himself.
He must have been a very courageous man to deliver you.
He was an inventor. Can you think of anything more useless in a small town like this?
Not if he invented a way to get out.
That he did, all with some gimmick or other. And he made money. Not a lot, but enough to set us up comfortably. He was very proud of me when I graduated law school. He was certain I'd go a long way in this world.
And you did, didn't you? The head of a big chemical company?
I'm just another hired hand. The company belongs to my wife's family. My wife is a fact that I can't avoid. She's the center of a huge spider web of family, money, country clubs, and time-killing childish employments. Fall into it once.
She touches his lips. He takes her hand and leans in close as two elderly women walk by staring.
What will the neighbors think?
The worst. You know, that's exactly what I'm thinking now. I want to kiss you right here. On Chestnut Street at high noon in the worst possible way.
You know, I'm glad you're in chemicals.
He pulls her close and kisses her. Now, Gloria's mother stares off as she sits at a table in her apartment with Frances Thurber. Frances studies a hand of playing cards.
Annie!
Startled, Mrs. Wandress offers her some chocolates. Frances pushes them aside.
Annie, did you play? Quite a while ago.
Annie quickly shuffles through her cards.
There. You can't be out of clubs.
Well, what did I play?
Your heart. And I can hear yours pounding right across the table.
Be sorry, Franny.
Let's forget the game.
No. I'll pay attention. Now let's play.
I'd rather you took your troubles out and put them on the table.
I don't want to burden you with them.
So what am I your friend for? Your money? Or maybe I want to steal your husband. Look, you think I don't know you haven't heard from your daughter in 6 days?
She's never done such a thing before without calling.
She leaves the table.
Something terrible must have happened.
Now, why does it have to be bad? There are good things that happen too, you know.
Frances, look, you're my best friend, but I can't talk to you, frankly.
Why not?
There are things you don't know about and shouldn't. Nobody should.
Yes, they should.
No, her father died when she was so little.
She looks out the window.
If only she had a father who was wise enough and strong enough to keep her on the right path. Once there was a man I almost married. The Major, Major Hartley. Somehow or other, Gloria didn't like him. It might have been good for her if I had.
Anne. Gloria's a good girl. Don't worry about her.
But you always say such impolite things to her.
I say the same thing to everybody. I'm a born critic. There's bad in everything, but there's good, too. And her good far outweighs the bad. Oh, if she was as bad as she pretends, you wouldn't have heard from her in 6 years.
Do you mind if I kiss you?
You do, and I'll spread an ugly rumor all around the neighborhood.
They hug. Now, Gloria and Liggett walk hand in hand on a waterfront pier. They hurry down a flight of stairs and across a bridge onto a floating dock, where a 30-foot sailboat is moored. Gloria, wearing a black and white fur-lined winter coat and a violet scarf in her hair, watches as Liggett hops aboard the boat and pulls off the canvas cover. Liggett beams with pride.
She's a real rust bucket. But she's mine.
A yacht? You didn't tell me.
Well, it doesn't have any Van Goghs in it. But I do have two original copies of Playboy magazine somewhere.
Let's go aboard and sail away for a year and a day to the land of the bong trees.
The owl and the cat. Come aboard, mate, and sign on.
Taking her hands, he helps her onto the boat.
Oh!
She slips and he catches her.
But I warn you. The crew hasn't touched land or seen a woman for 3 months.
Crazy. Where are you bound for, Captain?
Out of frustration. Bound for ecstasy.
I've heard a lot about ecstasy.
It's everything they say. And more.
She stares into his eyes for a moment, then moves past him, heading for the entrance to the cabin.
If you'd kindly show me to my quarters, Captain. You can lift anchor anytime.
Grinning, Liggett takes off his fedora hat and follows her into the cabin. Now, Emily Liggett sits up on a canopied four-poster bed reading a book. An older woman enters wearing a housecoat.
Emily?
Mother!
Emily hops up and hurries to her mother.
You should be in bed.
And you should not be in bed. At least alone.
Emily takes her hand.
I can take care of myself. Which seems to be more than you can do. Now, I want to tell you about our family.
Mother, it's 11 o'clock and I know all about it.
I want to tell you anyway. Please sit down. I want to make a point.
All right.
We've had sacrifice and cowardice, honor and infidelity, courage, love, deception, confusion, brilliance, tragedy.
Mother, why didn't you just have Herbert bring me the dictionary?
Do you know what we've never had in the family as long as the history of it's been recorded?
Emily closes the door.
Privacy.
There's not one single solitary divorce.
Emily turns to stare at her mother.
It's my opinion after 150 years that we've earned the privilege of a divorce with a clear conscience. Tomorrow I want you to call Mr. Robinson and instruct him to draw up the necessary papers and to have them served forthwith on that worthless absentee husband of yours.
He is not worthless.
Then why isn't he with you? Or you with him?
Mother, you were ill, and I wanted to stay here and look after you.
You wanted to hide from unpleasantness and the truth. Somewhere at this very minute, he's probably lifting a glass in a bar. Or some woman's skirts, or both, and you know it.
Oh, Mother, don't be vulgar.
Vulgarity has its uses. Anyway, your marriage is over. Divorce him without delay. And start out fresh.
No, never. And this is not pride speaking, Mother, but because I know Wes is good. And I love him.
Oh, nonsense, Emily.
Now, Mother, you listen to me. If there's anything wrong with Wes, we brought it about.
Explain.
Well, instead of my living his life, we brought him here to ours. And we handed him a big gift-wrapped package and said, here, here's your life. Don't bother to live it yourself. You even presented him with a meaningless job, all title and no work. One day he woke up with energy to burn, and he started burning it. But in all the wrong directions. Liquor, women, defiance. And the more he did it, the more he had to go on doing it to justify it.
But you're not running a mission for lost egos.
Mother, I'm running a marriage. Not just through the good days, but through the bad days, too. Someday Wes is going to find himself. And when he does, I want to be there.
And in the meantime?
All I need is patience.
How much have you got left?
I don't know, Mother. That's what scares me. I don't know.
Emily's mother gets up from her chair. She joins her daughter on a small couch and puts a protective arm around her.
You're a magnificent woman, Emily. Magnificent. But why don't you fight for him? A knock-down, drag-out kind of fight.
And give him all the more reason to run away from me?
Her mother looks away. Then she stands and paces slowly.
Emily...
She turns to her daughter.
Where did you ever learn all this wisdom?
Emily stands up.
From you, you fool!
She steps to her mother and hugs her. Now, on a crowded city sidewalk, Gloria and Liggett walk arm in arm wearing winter coats. They stop to peer in a large store window.
That attaché case. A man would love that, wouldn't he?
Any man. Especially if the right woman gave it to him.
I know the right woman and the right man. Let's buy it.
They head for the door. Inside, Gloria steps up to a counter.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'd like to see that attaché case, please. Oh. The one in tan. Mm-hmm.
Liggett stands at Gloria's side. The clerk brings the case to the counter.
Okay. Can you give her it?
Yes, of course.
Gloria smiles at Liggett, who pats his pockets for a lighter.
Would you care to have the initials put on it in gold?
Gloria lights a cigar.
Excuse me. We have our own machine and can do it in a minute.
Fine, thank you.
What initials, please?
S.C.
S.C., thank you.
S.C.?
Mm-hmm.
Who's S.C.?
Steve Carpenter.
And who's Steve Carpenter?
Friend of mine.
Out of nowhere. Completely out of nowhere, suddenly comes a friend of yours called Steve.
Gloria looks at Liggett, then tilts her head.
It's his birthday. Every birthday for the past 12 years, I've bought him a present.
Oh, that's grand. I'm all choked up.
He walks away from her. She looks down.
Liggett?
He turns to her, squinting fiercely.
I'm going to have to leave you today and go see Steve.
Now look.
I know. You're with me, kid, remember?
The clerk walks by.
It'll be only a moment, ma'am.
Thank you. Oh, clerk?
Gloria leans over the counter.
My name is Gloria Wandris. A couple of days ago, I called to see if something would be ready for me today. Do you know what it is?
Yes, I have it right here. Yes, Wandris. Here it is, miss.
The clerk hands Gloria a small wrapped package and she offers it to Liggett. He looks at her surprised as she places it in his hand. He unwraps the package to reveal a red jewelry box. Inside, he finds a gold-colored cigarette lighter engraved BU8. He takes it out of the box and smiles at Gloria, who smiles back. He moves to kiss her, then turns to the clerk watching them from across the counter.
Do you mind?
Go right ahead, sir.
The clerk starts to walk away, then peeks back at the couple. They kiss, holding each other close, then separate slowly.
Gloria, I'm afraid it's your turn to act like a fool because there's something I have to tell you.
You act like a man who's expecting his wife back in town.
How did you know? Today?
I always knew. Someday.
Here I was, trying to find a way to... Look, Gloria, I have to spend at least tonight with her.
Gloria shrugs, then leans against the counter.
A good night's sleep will be the best thing for you. Besides, I have Steve to keep me warm.
Don't say things like that.
He stares at her gravely.
Mr. Liggett, darling, I can hardly wait for your call tomorrow. You won't forget the number.
I'll do my best.
And Liggett, thank you for not calling me honey and babe and dollface anymore.
I couldn't. I didn't think of you like that anymore.
She lowers her eyes for a moment, then returns his gaze. Now at Gloria's mother's apartment, the tiny Pomeranian dog sits on the sofa staring at the front door. It runs to the door as Gloria enters. She looks down at it as she turns on a light and places her key on a small table. Then she crosses the front hallway and opens another door.
Mama?
Gloria wanders into the living room, taking off her coat and dropping it on a chair. Her mother enters through the front door. When she notices Gloria, she quickly puts down her grocery bag and her purse and hurries to embrace her daughter.
Darling, I've been so worried about you.
I know you have been, darling, and I'm sorry.
Are you hungry?
No. Mama, I want to tell you what I've been doing.
No, no, dear, you don't have to.
I do. I've been with a man a whole week.
Mrs. Wandress stands, shaking her head at Gloria.
Let me tell you the truth for once in my life.
No, please.
Gloria
please.
Follows her.
We both know what kind of a girl I've been. We both know what I've been
doing. No, I don't want to hear about it.
Mama, you have to.
She grabs her.
Unless I can be honest with you about yesterday, how can you believe me today?
Believe what?
I'm different. Mama, I am different. Yesterday, it was men, a whole world full of men.
Let me go! You're hurting me! You're
Mama,
hurting.
Face it! I was the slut of all time!
Mrs. Wandress slaps her daughter. They stare at each other.
If only you'd done that before. Long ago, every time I came home all soaked through with gin.
Her mother turns away.
I'm sorry.
Gloria caresses her shoulders.
Oh. It's not your fault, Mama. It never has been. It was in me. But it isn't there anymore. It's no longer just men for me. There's only one man. One. Just one. Maybe it's too late for marriage. But it's not too late for love.
Gloria's mother slowly turns to face her again.
By some miracle, I'm like everybody else. I'm in love. You can look at me, Mama, without wishing I'd never been born.
They hug. Now the directory of a building reads Bingham Smith Associates, Corporation Counselor, 7th floor. Liggett enters a large office and finds his friend Bing reading by a bookshelf.
Hi, Bing. Hi, Lig.
Bing turns a page, then looks up at Liggett.
Well?
Is that office still open?
Bing reshelves the book.
Yes or no?
So you finally came to your senses. Well, what brought this on?
Something just woke me up.
Bing closes the office door.
I won't ask you point blank what it was, because whatever it was, I wish to God it had happened to you 5 years ago. Now, are you prepared to work hard?
Harder than you.
We keep regular hours. Law and liquor don't go together. It'll take you 6 months of study to catch up.
I'll catch up in three.
All right, Lig, old friend, let's go.
Liggett extends his hand and Bing shakes it. Now a woman leads Gloria into an office.
but she's here, Doctor.
Good afternoon, Dr. Treadman.
I don't know if I care to talk with you, Miss Wanders.
Well, then why'd you let me in?
Don't try to analyze me. You don't have the training.
Not in books, perhaps.
You've missed three sessions in a row, and you're late for this one.
Doctor.
I have only so much time a day. If you don't need the time, there are people who desperately do.
Doctor.
Now, let's get to work without any more nonsense. Hmm? And I'm sure after all that we'll have no rapport, but if you get mad enough, I might find something.
Dr. Treadman, are you hard of hearing?
No.
I've been trying to tell you something.
What?
I don't need you anymore. I have no problems anymore.
No?
I'm in love. I am in love. I am really in love.
I am delighted to hear it.
Goodbye, Dr. Treadman. Thank you for everything.
Gloria. Gloria. While it is sometimes possible that love can solve many things, love is not so simple that you can rely on it as a complete solution. So, if it isn't all that you hoped it would be, if it doesn't work out, don't hesitate to come back quickly.
But it will work out. I'm going to make it work.
She heads for the door.
But if it doesn't?
She stares back at the doctor.
But it will. It has to.
Gloria leaves. Now she walks up to the door of Steve's apartment. She carries a wrapped package with several ribbons.
Happy birthday, Steve.
Come on in, Norma.
I'm going to give her my best.
Sorry, Norma. Yeah, that place sounds fine. All right, I'll pick you up in a half hour.
As Steve talks on the phone, what? Gloria kisses his cheek.
Oh, that was just a studio messenger. Okay, see you later. Bye. What are you trying to do to me?
Drive you wild with desire.
Oh, Gloria, where you been all this time?
Oh, I've been chained to the wall of a sanitarium, trying to keep away from you.
Gloria.
Indifference. You can't drive me away this time with indifference. Not this time.
Norma's waiting. I gotta get...
Flesh and blood can only stand so much voluptuous torture. You have 30 seconds, buddy boy.
Gloria, have you gone on the needle?
I'm hooked. I am hooked. I'm hooked on you.
Cut it out.
You have 20 seconds.
Gloria follows Steve
19,
to the closet. The fur
18,
coat hangs inside.
17, 6. Oh, the coat. Oh, Lord, the coat. She's coming back to town today. What am I going to do?
16, 15.
Oh.
14.
I'm
carrying
13. Than I am. 12. Goodbye.
11.
Happy birthday.
Gloria runs out of the apartment carrying a coat. Now, Gloria steps out of a red sports car by a building marked the Sandringham. Nearby, a long black limousine pulls up and Emily Liggett steps out. Gloria watches as Emily's driver hands her a package and the building's doorman salutes her.
Mrs. Liggett. Welcome home, Mrs. Liggett. It's good to have you back.
How nice of you, George.
And how's Mrs. Jescott?
Oh, she's coming along fine, out of danger.
Gloria stands with the coat slung over her arm, frowning as she watches Emily walk inside. She turns and heads back to her car, then breaks into a run. She gets in the car and tosses the coat onto the passenger seat. Closing her eyes, she takes a deep breath. Now, in the dressing room adjoining the Liggett's bedroom, Emily does her nails. Liggett walks in and watches her.
Oh, darling, I didn't even hear you come in. You've been standing there long.
A minute. Welcome home.
He kisses her on the cheek.
Thank you, Wes. Thank you. Well, I must say you're looking surprisingly youthful.
I'm far from being an old man as yet, I hope.
I didn't mean that you ever were old. It's just that...
He walks away.
There's a certain aliveness about you. I don't know what I mean.
Is your mother feeling better?
Yes, much.
Well, that's nice. I'm glad. Say, Emily, there's something
I know. Missing.
What?
I noticed it as soon as I came in.
What are you talking about?
My coat.
What coat?
My mink.
Your mink is missing?
Yes, didn't you know it was gone?
Of course not.
Liggett opens the closet door.
See?
Well, you must have misplaced it.
I checked every closet.
Or maybe you left it out at Long Island.
Just to make certain, I called Mother, but it's not there.
But how could it be gone?
I don't know.
Well, I've been here every day and every night, and to my knowledge, nobody else has been in here but me. Well, none of our friends. Nobody.
Liggett lights a cigarette. He sees the BU-8 engraved on his lighter. He returns the lighter to his pocket and walks away.
Wes?
Emily follows him.
What's the matter? Have you thought of something?
Yes, I was thinking...
Yes?
Liggett walks out of the bedroom and Emily follows. In the living room, he stops and takes a puff from his cigarette.
Well, you know those...
Those what?
Those magazine salesmen and people who solicit for all those different charities. I've heard that some of them are fronts for burglaries.
Wes, you sound like a Park Avenue Sherlock Holmes.
All right, go ahead and laugh. But stranger things have happened.
No, I think the best thing to do is call the police right now.
No.
Why not?
Well, the cheap publicity and all.
Well, an expensive fur coat is hardly cheap publicity.
And the insurance companies. Well, once you've had something stolen, they label you a bad risk and your premium goes up.
Wes, you're being ridiculous and I don't understand it.
Well, I do.
He takes the phone receiver from her hand and slams it down.
I'll get a private detective. I know a good one.
He sits down.
Private detective? Wes, this is real life, not a television serial. Well, one time Mother lost a
diamond... Let me do it my way, Shelby, without your mother.
I didn't mean it that way.
Which way did you mean it?
I don't know. Wes, I'm your wife, and I want to do things your way, even if I...
Think they're stupid?
He stands up and storms out of the room.
I'll see you later.
Emily leans on a table as she watches him go. Now, at a dimly lit bar, Liggett finishes a drink and the bartender refills it.
Tom, you know a girl called Gloria Wondrous, dark-haired, about this high.
You don't have to describe Gloria to me, Mr. Liggett. I'd know her with my eyes closed, down the bottom of a coal mine during the eclipse of the sun.
Has she been here tonight?
Not for over a week. Let me tell you something. Without her, this place is dead. She's like catnip to every cat in town.
Liggett takes a long sip, then slams down his glass. Now, at a crowded restaurant, Liggett stands at the edge of the dining room, scanning the patrons. He walks over to the busy bar area, still looking around. Squeezing between other customers, he leans on the bar.
Give me a scotch and water, please.
Hey, Liggett, I've seen you around for a few days.
Make that a double.
Two men in suits join in.
Two of your best brandies?
Two brandies. Yeah, that's right. I've been kind of busy.
Yeah, I heard. That's the kind of business I wouldn't mind having again.
What are you talking about?
Oh, come on, Liggett, come on, huh? Gloria. Huh? Sure. Oh, she's frantic, isn't she? Like a rocket right off the earth. Who should know better than yours truly? Oh, Mother, help me. I'd have left home for that. Nah, she's got a traveling hitch. She's like a flea. Hop, hop, hop from one dog to another. She bites you and she's gone. She picks you up and she drops you. Well, welcome to the fraternity. We meet once a year in Yankee Stadium.
Liggett stares ahead sternly, then hurries off. Now in a phone booth.
Now listen, Butterfield, ain't. I've called her hundreds of times. I'm her closest friend. You've got to tell me where she is. It's a matter of life and death.
Liggett's forehead creases with anger.
You're liars. Liars, all of you. Thieves and liars. Now tell me.
He slams down the phone receiver. Now, Gloria drives down a dark road followed by a police car. She stops and the police car pulls up behind her. The officer taps on her window with a flashlight. She rolls it down.
You know the speed limit along here, miss?
No.
40 miles an hour, clearly posted every half mile. Do you know how fast you were going?
No.
65 miles an hour. Let me see your license, please.
She digs through her purse, then hands the officer a card. He inspects it, shining the flashlight on it.
Thank you. Now turn your face around toward me. Now breathe out.
He shines the light in her face.
Thank you. You got troubled?
She puts the license back in her purse, then looks ahead.
Yes.
I thought so. Now, let me give you some advice. Don't try to drive your troubles away. First thing you know, you're going to be mad at the world. You push your foot down on that gas pedal, and then you go. Tomorrow, the sun will come out just like it did this morning. Take it easy.
The officer walks away as Gloria verges on tears. She closes her eyes and covers her face with her hand. Now, daytime at Happy's motel. Happy brings a plate of donuts to Gloria, who sits in a chair smoking.
Cookies.
Gloria shakes her head. Happy sits down.
Well, so what was I saying? Oh, yeah. So she said to herself, you get in solid with the director. He puts you in solid with the producer. And pretty soon you wind up with a big part in the show.
Happy pours coffee.
So, 2 days, or should I say 2 nights later, she was in butt solid. Yeah, with the director, with his cousin. She was so busy being in solid with every Tom, Dick, and Harry and his Uncle George. She wouldn't recognize a producer. She found one right under her pillow. You take sugar? So now time passes, and our heroine is very big. Yeah, but not in the theater. No. No, in all the wrong places. In 500 little black books. In 28 divorce cases. 2 police blotters, and in 1 restraining sheet in a psychopathic ward in Bellevue. Are you sure?
She offers Gloria the donuts again.
Yeah, she hit it big. Oh, from a size 12 dress to a size 44. She went from looking like an orchid to a face like a pan of worms. And all because she said, with only a rag, a bone, a hank of hair, I will move the world my way. What's the matter? I'm boring you.
Gloria shakes her head as she takes a glove from her purse. Hey. Happy touches her arm.
You live it up. You kick up your heels. You grab everything you can get. You light the candle from one end to the other, like they say. And then one day, you too can be the proud proprietor of a very heavily mortgaged roadside brothel. And wish you were dead.
Happy takes a bite of a donut.
Morning, darling.
Now at the Liggetts, Emily sits down to breakfast. Liggett glares down at the table.
What time did you get in last night, Wes?
Late.
She pours coffee.
Did the private detective have any...
He stops her.
Detective?
Well, the man you're going to see about the coat.
Oh, him. He was on a job last night. I'm going to see him again today.
Liggett takes a sip from a glass of orange juice, then looks at it, grimacing. He pours half of the juice into his coffee cup, then gets up. By a cabinet, he pours vodka from a crystal decanter into his glass.
Wes... I've seen you drink many times in many ways, but never in the morning like this.
Don't worry, Emily. It's not alcoholism. It's just a kind of medicine.
He takes a gulp, then regards the glass.
Why don't you go back to bed?
I can't.
He sits down at the table.
I have to go out and look for your fur coat.
Why do you feel so personally responsible for it?
Because it disappeared while I was here, and I don't like that.
No one's blaming you.
That's not the point.
What is?
Emily.
He moves his hands as if to gesture, then stops and looks at his wife.
I could tell you things about people. But never mind. You have enough problems of your own.
Wes, is there anything I can do?
Yes. When I come back with that coat, which I will, I want you to throw me out.
She stares at him with wide eyes. He takes a sip of his drink. Now at her apartment, Mrs. Wandress sews a small mat. Gloria walks in.
Hi, Mama.
Hello, darling.
She takes off her red coat and drops it on a chair.
That looks pretty. Thought you might like it for your bathroom.
I would.
Gloria sits down.
I'm sorry I didn't come home last night.
Oh, it's all right.
I spent the night in a motel.
Her mother looks up at her.
Alone. I had some thinking to do.
Oh? Gloria stands and wanders into the hallway by the door. She looks at herself in a mirror on the wall.
I saw a woman. Utterly proper. Utterly conventional. Utterly beautiful.
Mrs. Wandress stands and walks over to Gloria.
You're beautiful too, dear.
Gloria moves away from her.
I have a face. That's not the kind of beauty I mean.
What kind of beauty?
Gloria leans against a wall, gazing off.
The kind that comes from self-respect, I guess. That shines.
I've seen that kind. It takes a lifetime to find.
I'm going to find it.
I think you will.
What if he late called?
Any messages?
Mr. Liggett says he has to see you. It's a matter of life and death.
Mrs. Wandress gets a slip of paper from a desk.
Did he say when or where?
I've written it down.
Gloria takes the note and walks into the next room. Now at a restaurant, Liggett sits scowling at a table with a martini. A waiter brings another and reaches to take the first. Liggett moves it away from him with an annoyed expression. The waiter leaves and Liggett stares down at the table. Gloria walks over, carrying the fur coat. Liggett sees her as he throws back the last of the drink. He glares at her as he slowly lowers the glass. She looks down at him uncertainly.
So you did take it?
She lowers her eyes and takes a deep breath.
Yes, and I'm sorry, Liggett. May I sit down?
It's up to you, honey.
She considers him for a moment, then sits down, watching him timidly. He looks her over with his eyes partly closed. A waiter comes by.
You care to order something, ma'am?
No, the lady's not going to order.
The waiter leaves. Gloria hands the fur coat to Liggett.
Why did you bother to bring it back?
Because it isn't mine.
Because you're scared, you mean?
He leans toward her, scowling.
Because you know that I'm not like one of those ordinary Joes you take for a sleigh ride. Because you know that while I might have given you the world, I'd tear your head off if you stole as much as a nickel from me. Isn't that it?
She closes her eyes.
No.
So you pick up the man when you want.
He holds up an ashtray.
And drop him like a bomb. When you want.
A waiter comes for the shards of glass.
Get lost, we're talking.
The waiter leaves. Other patrons stare. Liggett squints at Gloria and shakes his head.
People don't mean anything to you, do they? The way they feel in here. Not down where you live.
I care about some people.
For an hour, or a day, or a week. Till you've had your kicks. Then you slither off to the next one.
She closes her eyes and turns away.
I'll talk to you tomorrow.
He grabs her.
There isn't going to be any tomorrow. And for once, somebody's going to drop you. And go ahead, try that heel trick again. The one that always gets the boys hot. And I'll rip this arm right out of your shoulder.
May I say something to you?
Sure, honey, babe, dollface, kid. Say something sexy. Something that always got the boys headed straight for the motel.
You can't have everything in life. Be grateful for the few things you do get, no matter where they come from.
The pornographic philosopher.
He tosses her arm aside.
Now you just sit there like a good tramp should. Until I get out of your sight.
He stands.
I can't stomach being seen in public with you.
She holds up the coat.
Liggett.
And don't you dare mention my name again. You're a joke. A dirty joke from one end of this town to the other.
Now, that'll be enough of that.
A man puts a hand on Liggett's arm, and Liggett shoves him.
Now, look. Take it easy, mister.
He shoves a waiter.
Just a minute now. There's other women in this place, including my wife.
Liggett shoves the man again. The man grabs him and punches him in the face, then the stomach.
Hey, take it easy, pal. Come on.
Liggett goes down.
I'm sorry.
Other men help Liggett up. He struggles to get away from them, then hurries out.
Just must have gone berserk, I guess. He's going to be all right. I'm awfully sorry, miss. Can I help you get it?
Shaking her head, Gloria picks up the coat and hurries after Liggett. Now, her car pulls up to the dark sidewalk outside his building. Liggett sits in the passenger seat looking down. He fumbles drunkenly with the door handle. She reaches to help him, and he pushes her hand away. Inside their apartment, Emily walks through the living room. She stops at a window and pulls aside the curtain. Below, she sees Liggett stepping awkwardly out of the car. From inside the car, Gloria watches him with a worried expression. With the fur coat over her arm, she gets out. The doorman runs over to Liggett, who shoves him away.
Mr. Liggett! Good heavens, Mr. Liggett, what happened?
Get away.
Let me help...
Liggett!
He grabs the coat from her.
For a lousy fur coat, you do this? Want to give this back to my wife after something like you has touched it?
He throws it at her feet. She watches, wide-eyed. In the window, Emily knits her brow and frowns. Liggett stares fiercely at Gloria, then turns and staggers into the building. The doorman hurries after him. Gloria stands still, staring. Gradually, her eyes narrow and turn downward. Emily watches as Gloria picks up the fur coat from the sidewalk. Gloria moves slowly and heavily as she closes the passenger side door. She looks back at the building as she walks around to the driver's side. Inside the apartment, Emily closes her eyes tightly and takes a breath. She walks slowly across the living room and faces the front door. Liggett steps inside and scowls at her.
Leave me alone.
Do you want a doctor?
Yes, and tell him to bring me something to make me unconscious before I can think.
He walks away. Emily goes to the phone and picks up the receiver. Now, in his apartment, Steve lies in bed. He sits up. He gets out of bed and puts on slippers. Then he finds a robe in the dark and puts it on as he walks to the door.
Who is it? Who is it?
It's me.
He unlocks the door and opens it for Gloria, who wears the fur coat. As she steps into the dark apartment, the light from the hallway reveals lines beneath her downcast eyes. She wanders partway into the room and stops. Steve closes the door, then walks over to her uncertainly.
Can I get you anything?
She stares off. Steve crosses the apartment. Gloria remains motionless. He turns on a light and she turns away from it, her cheeks puffy below her eyes. Steve returns with a bottle of Chianti and a glass. Gloria takes a breath and turns to him.
Ask me about the coat, Steve. Ask me.
He looks down, then shrugs.
I see you still have it.
He puts down the bottle and the glass. Gloria hugs the coat close to her body.
Because it's mine.
She sits down, her arms still folded tightly.
Every skin, every thread, every hair, it's mine. And you know why?
He walks to her side.
Why?
Because I earned it. Pretty good pay for 1 week. $1,000 in for a day.
She pulls off the coat and lets it fall.
You and Liggett couldn't make it.
That isn't the important thing now. The important thing is, Steve, I took money.
Gloria, don't.
Do you know what that makes me?
Baby, don't.
He rubs her back. She leans her head on his chest. He holds her. She throws herself face down on his bed. Steve walks to the bedside and lays a comforting hand on Gloria's back. He sits down next to her, looking down at her sadly.
Steve.
Gloria sits up slowly, propping herself on one arm.
I have to tell you something.
I know about you.
You don't know this. Nobody knows this. Except a certain man somewhere who I'd like to think of as standing in the middle of a lake filled with burning gasoline. Please listen.
She closes her eyes and puts a hand to her mouth. He looks down at the floor.
I was 13.
She opens her eyes.
My father was dead. All older men seemed like fathers to me.
Steve gradually looks up at her.
But I wanted one of my own. to sit in his lap, to hug him, and have him say I was beautiful. Do you remember Major Hartley? Major Hartley, my mother's friend. He came down to Grand Central Station one day to pick me up from summer camp. Mother was away visiting. He took me home. He let me sit on his lap. He let me hug him. He told me I was beautiful. He stayed in that house for 1 week and taught me more about evil than any 13-year-old girl in the world knew.
Glory, don't.
You haven't heard the worst of it yet. I loved it. Every awful moment of it, I loved. That's your Gloria, Steve. That's your darling Gloria.
She stands and paces the room, her arms folded close to her body.
I made a way of life out of it. The deep shame of it didn't hit me until it was too late. I couldn't go back to 13 again. I had one chance to stop it. One last chance. And I threw it all away for 32 animals sewn together in a coat.
She covers her face. Steve hurries to her and holds her arms.
It's not all over. You have another chance.
She moves away from him.
Where are you going?
It doesn't matter.
Gloria, wait. It matters a great deal what you do.
He stops her by the door.
You've got to decide what you're going to do next. I do, too. Stay here tonight.
They look into each other's faces. She puts a hand on his shoulder. She leans in to kiss his cheek.
Thank you, Steve.
She wanders slowly into the apartment, holding the coat in her folded arms. She sits down on the couch and leans her head back. Now at his apartment, Liggett sits in bed fully clothed, smoking a cigarette. Emily puts some mail on the bed table next to him.
Anything you need, Wes?
He stares straight ahead and she turns away.
There is a divorce.
There's no call for such remorse over last night.
Let's face it, Emily. I'm a failure as a husband. I'm a failure as a man.
Wes, I love you.
Liggett stands up.
I know you do.
He faces Emily.
And that makes a divorce all the more necessary. Because I can't go on disappointing you.
Couldn't you try?
No.
Liggett takes the mail from the bed table and flips through it, walking away from Emily.
Do you love her? That woman you were with?
I seem to.
But you fought over her and sent her away in a rage.
Yes, I did. I was sick because I was afraid I was going to lose her. And I hated her unreasonably because I couldn't stand the thought of losing her. Just as you hate me now.
He turns away from her for a moment, then strides briskly out of the room. Emily shakes her head, covers her face, and runs off. Now in his apartment, Steve sleeps curled up on top of the blanket at the foot of his bed. Gloria sleeps on the couch, wrapped in the fur coat. Norma walks in. She closes the door carefully behind her, then glances at Steve and stares at Gloria. She steps closer and peers at Gloria's sleeping face. She still has all her makeup on. Norma turns and peers at Steve. She glances back at Gloria, then nudges Steve's shoulder.
Good morning.
Good morning, sweetheart.
Open your eyes good. Make sure you know who you're talking to.
Norm, isn't it?
Shrewd guess.
Steve stands still in his bathrobe and tries to hug Norma. She pushes him away and holds up a key. He takes it, tosses it on the bed, and pulls her closer.
I want to marry you today.
On the couch, Gloria slowly opens her eyes. Norma nods mockingly.
I haven't anything else to do.
Good. I'll be ready in a minute.
Steve walks away. Gloria smiles and closes her eyes. Now at her mother's place.
Fine. Thank you very much. Okay.
Mrs. Wanders puts a suitcase by the door.
I just called Butterfield 8 and told them to shut off the service and to send me a bill.
Nearby, Mrs. Thurber eats chocolates.
As soon as I have an address in Boston, will you forward it to me?
Yes, dear, I will.
Mrs. Wanders sits down on a couch, not looking at Gloria. Mrs. Thurber watches her.
Take care of Mama, Mrs. Thurber.
Oh, I got plans for her. My cousin Harry.
Oh, Francis.
I'm a born matchmaker.
10%, of course.
Naturally. Look, I don't want to be a nosy neighbor, but why Boston?
Well, that's where the Pilgrims made a fresh start. It's good enough for them. I guess I can take it.
Can Boston take you?
What will you do in Boston, dear? Well, I'll buy a paper, look up the want ads. Same as any girl without a job.
Mrs. Thurber carries a cosmetics case to the door, then tries on the fur coat.
Oh, this is as close as I'll ever get to heaven.
Do you like it, Mrs. Thurber?
Of course not. I'm only faint from not eating in 3 days.
It's yours.
No.
Wear it in good health.
Oh, no. You can't bribe me with this. I could never say a mean word about you as long as I live. I'd die of boredom.
Well, then just keep it warm for me.
Mrs. Thurber looks in the mirror. Gloria steps closer to her mother.
Goodbye, Mama.
They hug.
I don't want you to go. I have a feeling you'll never come back.
I never will come back, Mom. But I'll send for you as soon as I can.
Gloria kisses her mother on the cheek, then leaves her looking down at the floor. At the chair, Gloria kisses the little dog on the head. Now, Liggett stands in his bedroom wearing a gray suit talking on the phone.
But did she leave any forwarding address or number? Now look, this is the most important telephone call of my life. You must tell me, please. Boston. You're certain? Thank you, Butterfield 8. Thanks.
He hangs up. Now Liggett drives along a small town road, watching the passing businesses carefully. In the dirt parking lot of a diner named Angie's, he sees a little red sports car. He pulls in and parks next to it. Liggett gets out of his car and peers inside the sports car. Then he heads into the diner. Inside, Gloria sits alone at a small table. She puts a coin into a jukebox and presses buttons. When Liggett sees her from behind, he pauses for a moment, then strides toward her. Gloria notices him and looks up quickly, wide-eyed.
Don't be frightened, Gloria. Please.
She stares up at him, leaning away slightly. He kneels down so that his face is just above hers. She flinches as he leans closer.
I can only think of one apology. Will you marry me?
She looks away.
I've arranged for a divorce. Wait for me, and in time, I'll make you forget every word I uttered last night.
You can't. I'm left with those words. I'm branded with them. But thank you for asking me to marry you. If only you'd done it yesterday, it might have meant something. But not today.
But I only did what I did last night. Because you were so much in my blood that I exploded.
But you were right last night. No man could marry me and not keep remembering. You'd have to explode at my life You couldn't help but explode.
Oh, Gloria. I can think of a dozen apologies.
Oh, I know. And I'd accept. But then look. Look at all the thousands of explosions ahead and a thousand apologies and a thousand acceptances until we both got so disgusted.
I love you. I love you.
He pulls her hand to his face and kisses it.
Anna, I love you.
They face each other.
It's no use. It's no damn use.
Gloria, let's go someplace where we can talk. Over at Happy's. Just talk. Just so that we can be together and alone. So that I can tell you what I want to do.
If I get in a room with you, together, alone, I know what'll happen. It'll be the same thing all over again.
We started this whole thing together. We're obligated to solve it together. Please.
He stands up. She closes her eyes and leans back.
Oh.
She opens her eyes, now wet with tears, as she stands and heads for the door. He follows with her jacket. Now, at Happy's motel, a maid pushes a cart, and Happy walks a dog. Liggett pulls into the parking lot, and Gloria follows in her own car.
Hello, Mr. Liggett. Oh, you brought another weary traveler.
Hi, honey.
Welcome home.
Give me a key, Happy.
Oh, sure, sure. Keys, that's my business. Through these doors, past the most beautiful...
Key, Happy, give me a key.
Yeah, right away.
Gloria takes a quick breath as she watches Liggett with Happy. She stretches out her tense fingers. She throws the car into reverse and pulls out of her parking space. From inside the motel office, Liggett hurries to a window and sees her take off. He runs outside. Gloria reaches the end of a dirt road and skids onto the main road. Liggett races to his car and gets in. Then he gets out, fumbles through his pockets for his keys, and gets back in. He backs out of his parking space. Happy jumps out of the way. Liggett's car raises a cloud of dust as it speeds down the dirt road. Now, Gloria drives along an isolated two-lane road. Inside the car, she fidgets, moving her fingers along the steering wheel. Her eyes move from side to side in thought. She passes a farmhouse as Liggett speeds along the wooded highway. He glances nervously at his rearview mirror. Gloria takes a deep breath and makes a sharp turn onto a road marked northbound throughway. Liggett passes the farmhouse. In her car, Gloria takes deep breaths and blinks slowly. Liggett makes the sharp turn onto the throughway. On the throughway, Gloria passes a sign that reads passenger car toll 50 cents. Behind her, Liggett stares ahead fiercely as he drives. Gloria stops at a toll booth and hands change to an attendant. She continues onto a wide highway leading to a long bridge. Behind her, Liggett pays the toll and continues. On the bridge, Gloria looks up at her rearview mirror. She sees Liggett's car behind her. Her speedometer's needle moves from 40 to 60. Liggett watches her, clenching his jaw. He tailgates the car ahead of him, then jerks into the fast lane. Gloria checks her mirror, then speeds into a stretch of highway surrounded by stone cliffs. She checks her mirror, and her mouth drops open as she sees Liggett closing in. Liggett stares ahead at her intensely with his brow knit. He looks down for a moment, then back at the road, his eyes widen. Gloria turns to look at Liggett. When she turns back, she's speeding toward a barrier that reads Road Closed, Detour. goes through the barrier and up a hill of dirt into the air. Her car lands upside down on a rocky slope. At the barrier, Liggett stops his car and gets out. He hurries under the barrier into the slope. His mouth opens and he runs a few steps toward the edge of the slope. Later, police inspect the scene and two men load a stretcher into an ambulance. Liggett stands stiffly watching them. The ambulance drives off. Liggett watches after it as a police officer approaches him.
You saw the accident?
Yes.
Your name, please?
Weston Liggett. 1038 Fifth Avenue, New York City.
I stopped that same girl two nights ago for speeding. Wish I'd put her in jail then.
They didn't make her name yet, chick.
No.
Gloria Wondrous.
You knew her?
Liggett nods.
We were traveling north. Together.
The two officers look up from their notebooks and exchange surprised glances. Now Liggett walks into his apartment with his shoulders slumped. He bats the door closed. He takes a few sluggish steps, then stops. Emily comes over. Liggett doesn't look at her.
You're going to read about it in the newspapers tomorrow, Emily. The family name. Your picture, my picture. Everything.
He shrugs and walks a few more steps.
I'm sorry.
Emily follows him.
Boys, I don't understand. What's happened? Tell me.
She's dead. She lived for an hour unconscious. But she's dead.
Oh. That girl?
Yes.
Oh, terrible.
Automobile accident. She was trying to get away from me.
I'm sorry. So sorry.
I don't suppose that anybody would think that she was a good person. But strangely enough, she was. On the surface, she was all sex and devil-may-care. Yet everything in her was struggling toward respectability. And she never gave up trying.
He hunches over, grimacing. He straightens and turns to his wife.
Emily. I'm going out looking for my pride. Alone. When I find it, if you're here, I'll come back. And we'll see if it still has any value to either of us.
Liggett heads for the door. Emily turns to watch him. He opens the door, glances back at her, and leaves. Titles appear. The End, Butterfield 8, presented by Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. Now a logo. Warner Brothers, a Time Warner Entertainment Company.